All right, so fill us in on Entourage. What episode have you been watching?
Well, before I was really interrupted to ask and had to start recording, I was watching Day Fuckers, which is actually one of my favorite classic episodes of the show.
Day Fuckers?
Day Fuckers, yeah. Uh-huh. So at the beginning of the episode, they're at breakfast, the gang, you know, the four of them. And a girl is making eyes at E, and then they find out through witty banter that he's never had sex with a woman and not had some sort of emotional attachment. So they concoct some sort of bet where E and Turtle, they decide that they want to see which one of them can fuck first that day. So Vincent takes E under his wing, and Johnny Drama takes Turtle under his wing. Also, upon revisiting the show, the comic duo of Kevin Dillon's character, Johnny Drama, and what's his name? Jerry Ferreira, who plays Turtle. It's just, they are really a match made in heaven. I completely forgot about it.
Did you know that Randall Emmett of Vanderpump Rules fame is the person whom Turtle is based on, of Mark Wahlberg's friends?
And who is he again? Is he Lala's boyfriend?
Yes, he's Lala's boyfriend, and he's sort of an aspiring film producer. He had a co-producer credit on The Irishman. And he also was the main producer of, lest we forget, Gotti.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
E directed Gotti.
No. He didn't direct. Oh, yes. E directed Gotti.
Yeah. Oh, interesting.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's like you'd really see who runs that town. People from Boston. And they're all over the fucking.
True.
They're all over the Federal Reserve. They're fucking six seats on the Supreme Court. It's all Boston guys. When are we going to wake up?
That's true. Like, well, Michael,
are they
Michael
Boston
Schur,
or are they Queens?
Michael Schur is responsible for 90% of sitcoms now that last more than one season, and he's another one of these Boston mafia guys, just like BJ Novak and the rest of them.
That's why Ben Shapiro is a Celtics fan.
Yeah, he knows how to get on the ground floor.
That's how you get in. It's like Scientology. I mean, think about this. Boston guys make up 2% of the population.
Approximately. And, I think that's right.
Yeah, and look how they're represented.
I mean, how do you have two Wahlberg brothers be famous? And
well,
then
the
another
show
one
is
gets
produced
a burger chain? Give me a fucking break.
No, I think there's more Wahlberg brothers. I think there's about 14 Wahlberg
Yeah, but
brothers.
Even two of them being even remotely famous is ridiculous. That's a special
a wide
influence.
Array. Yeah. They have
those
an injured Wahlberg brother.
Those
What's
burgers
that?
Are terrible.
I haven't been there.
Awful.
I kind of want to.
It's garbage.
I know that they have a special edition of Jordans that are Wahlburgers edition. Which I'm
right,
definitely going to
go check out. Go cop those.
On the resale market.
but Adam, so you've been sort of, you've been binging, you've been doing a sort of a rewatch of Entourage. I mean, what are your takeaways? Does it hold up?
The world is a nightmare right now. And this is the one thing that's making me feel good, is this show. Yes, but hijinks ensue, and Turtle and Johnny Drama go to an internet cafe and then hit up Craigslist Casual Encounters. And a very beautiful woman, he meets up with her in public. She's looking for a small, cuddly man. And then it turns out that she wants him to dress up as she's a furry fetishist. And I think I haven't finished the episode, but I believe that Turtle does win the bet.
So he yiffs it up.
The thing about Entourage, and I think the reason it makes me feel so good, is that the stakes could not be lower. I mean, even in the A plot,
can Vincent do the movie? That's it.
Can he do the movie? It always works out in the end. And then maybe it doesn't work out, but then it works out again.
Yeah. That's why the last seasons were bad, is because they tried to change that formula. Like the formula for the first like four seasons is like, can the guys hang out today? But then the formula for the last few seasons are like, oh no, is Vince sober? Is Vince going to be okay?
I watched an episode earlier today where the entire C plot was Johnny Drama sees, he wants to appear younger. So he sees someone wearing a trucker hat with a marijuana leaf on it. And the entire episode, he goes around Los Angeles trying to find this hat.
Yeah.
You know, it's just so many things don't make sense right now. And it's just like, there's something about that formula that just is so comforting. It's really like, it's there's absolutely, the stakes could not be lower.
I remember on Entourage, like a big plot point was Vincent starring in James Cameron's Aquaman. And the big joke was that Aquaman would be like the stupidest superhero to make a movie franchise about. But lo and behold, they've gone and done it. And you know what?
Not only that's the only big hit. That's their only like out of the park hit of the DC fucking universe. Well, is
Wonder
the goddamn
Woman
Aqua
was a big hit.
More than Aquaman made more money than Wonder Woman.
Yeah, but I couldn't bring myself to watch it because Vincent Chase is Aquaman. To me. Jason Momoa,
he's a pretender.
Is a joke. I mean, it is a joke. Yeah. Adrian Grenier is, you know. I did see him. I think he used to live in the neighborhood. I did see him at a coffee shop in Clinton Hill. Adrian Grenier asked the barista to turn the music down.
No, he was getting a free latte at Playground while you were being shown the door.
The community loves Vincent Chase. My brother has an Adrian Grenier story. It like doesn't make him.
Oh, really?
I think we can keep this in. It doesn't make him sound bad at all. He was like. He just overheard these two girls talking, like mid to late 20s, like pretty hot. And they were talking about how they had spent the weekend with Adrian Grenier. And he gave them money to take a cab back to, like, I don't know, Westchester or some shit. But they just pocketed it and took the train. But it's like, he's a good guy. He's going to pay for their cab back after fucking them. Like, good for him.
That's allegedly. That's better than the David Jeter or the Derek Jeter gift basket because you got to lug that thing home.
No, yeah. How are you going to do it? Transporting things in New York sucks. Only Adrian Grenier is thinking about your transportation.
Yeah, that's good on him. Honestly,
he is Queens.
Good guy.
He is Queens Boulevard.
New York City. That's Queens. That's how we do it in Queens, baby.
My friend did see E in a bar once, and he said he is 5'2" in real life.
No, E is
very little.
Well,
that's all celebrities. Yeah. There are no celebrities
the Entourage
over 5
crew
feet
is,
tall.
Is a manlet crew.
Yeah, Entourage was representation for manlets, and I'd honestly think we'd have less violence in the country if it was still on TV, like showing manlets that they can overcome.
I think I'm pretending the whole that series. These people are normal height, which is what we do with movie magic and CGI.
Yeah.
There's just something so nice about it. About like it kind of is like after the world has fallen apart like it has in the last 6 months. There's something about Entourage that's so comforting.
I know what you're. Yeah, I know what you mean though, because like you would watch Entourage after you watched Sopranos because Sopranos was so tense.
Mm-hmm.
But now you know what were the last two seasons of The Sopranos about? The collapse of America. And now we're
that's
living
so
in
true.
It. But we
that's
just
so true.
Vincent Chase is gone.
I used to watch Oz and then The Sopranos. I remember that when that was the lineup, and I'd watch just a prison. Shower sex rapes with my family.
Felix
on a Sunday night.
Felix, you say that Vinny Chase is gone. I say that he is merely occluded.
Yes.
What will Biden bring him back?
Yes.
Biden's gonna bring back good vibes
that's what
at the
need.
Low stakes of the Entourage universe to America.
I mean that is the Biden pitch though, right? It's like it's like you don't have to stop watching Maddow. We can go back to Entourage.
Yes. This is what you mean when you say Biden is going to save the culture. It's because all the people who have now, since Trump became president, have moved all their poker chips in on fighting every political battle on the terrain of culture, will immediately go back to not giving a shit about any of this. And we can go back to watching, you know, Hollywood himbos fuck movie stars.
I was thinking about, remember the episode where the entire stake is like, is Vincent gonna like do the movie? And the stakes is he wants like Warner Brothers to get him a date with Scarlett Johansson. Simpler time, like fuck. Dude, I'm gonna start watching that show.
Even the style of Hot Girl is so antiquated
at
this point.
Yes,
it's like it was kind of like the golden age of like girls with no ass and like incredibly long hair and. Dark, dark, dark tans and frayed jean skirts. That was like,
every woman that Vince fucks or E or whatever, like they all are the color of like mango jewel, the juice in mango jewel.
Yes.
They're white, but they're the color of that.
Just glowing orange.
Yeah. Well, and now no one can do that because of this goddamn Cheeto in the White House. Yeah. He's given it a bad name to look like
that. Nobody can do the Cheeto look anymore.
Yeah, it's like, it used to denote beauty.
Yeah.
He took away these angels. He took it away from them.
Well, you know, that's just a little bit of nostalgia, just a reminder of what they've taken from us. You know,
I might just start my own Entourage podcast co-episode.
No, you got
that's a great idea.
You got to come on This Is Sus. You got to, you know.
I will do, Adam. You want to do? Yeah.
We'll Adam, do an Entourage.
Yeah, I got Ben and Palma tomorrow. But yeah, next week or whenever, let's do it.
I'm down,
well,
dude.
Well, before this turns into an episode of This Is Sus, I think
we should
officially start the show. Hello, it's Chapo. It's me, Matt, and Felix, joined by our good friend Adam Friedland of Cumtown. Adam, how's it going?
Not good, honestly, because there was a community of fellas on Reddit.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, I was gonna go straight into that.
We're all down a member of the family today.
I was gonna go straight into that and just announce at the top of the show. I was gonna, you know, a little bit of show house cleaning, and by house cleaning I mean that in the very literal sense of like sweeping up and putting out the dead skin that collects around your stuff. And I'm talking, of course, about the permanent banning of both our Chapo Trap House and our Cumtown.
Oh, so
we have a Chapo Cumtown quorum now. So. Starting with you, Adam, you know, how are you going to function? How is the show going to continue without its collection of, you know, socially maladroit editors who contribute so much to the, you know, everything, to being funny, to us being funny, to the show being good?
Well, yeah, they are the fourth mic of our show for sure. You know, and we 100%. Do actually have a seat at the table, much like Elijah on Passover. There's an empty seat for the Cumtown subreddit, you know. No, I feel from what I've heard, because they've been private for a long time, they like me because enough bad things have gone wrong in my life for them to finally have decided that they like me. So, you know, and I was really playing
Pity
a long
is a
con
secret
with
weapon.
Them.
It's really useful sometimes.
I was playing a long, they don't want to see us win. I think when they found out Nick had muscles, they felt... they had like a brain, like a collective brain aneurysm, because you really want to see your heroes lose, I think.
Oh yeah.
So I found out is that I was finally in their good books, and now they've been iced by Serena Williams' husband.
And so, now they won't make any nice. You were going to get nice memes, and now there's no nice memes of you.
They were going to make nice memes about me that would have been very funny, I'm sure.
It wasn't just going to be your head on a bug forever.
I mean, I think the thing is like our fans are like think that they're as funny as Cumtown, and then your fans think they're as smart as Chapo. And I think to some extent that's probably worse.
Well, I think like being a fan of a podcast drives you insane, because I will admit. The podcasting paradox, that podcasting is incredibly easy, yet barely anyone is good at it.
Yeah.
So you see it and you're like, this is so fucking easy, but you also suck too much to do it.
Yeah.
So if you're an intense fan long enough, you're just like, hey, dude, big fan. I'm going to come to your house and kill you, fucking fat piece of shit, you know?
Well, apparently what happened is, like, you know, this is part of a big crackdown on social media. These companies, you know, are you know, they're getting a little bit nervous again about the, you know, the fever swamps of, you know, racism and terrorism and whatnot that are proliferating on their platforms and trying to cover their ass on the back end. So apparently what Reddit at least was really trying to do was get rid of r/TheDonald. Which is like the big clearinghouse of, you know, epic-based Trump memes. But they couldn't do that without having some sort of equal and opposite reaction on the left. So they decided to sort of balance it out by giving the axe to the Donald by getting rid of our Chapo Trap House and our Cumtown.
to show which, that they were being even-handed.
Yeah, being sort of even-handed and
hotbed.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Chapo alone is not as powerful as Donald Trump, but Chapo and Compton together. Well, there that's you go.
You know, it wasn't just enough. Chapo. It wasn't just the Chapo subreddit. There were, I knew about one of them. I did not know about the other one. There was a Chapo Trap House 2 and a Chapo Trap House 3, all of which got banned as well. So that's how you know you're really vibing when you've got a space where people are just budding off like spores every 6 months.
Well, yeah, I every forum I ever posted on had like an insane offshoot forum because like someone got into a fight with a mod and then it died after a few months. And it's like even on the new internet that's happening. So, you know, good. Some things never change.
I mean, just
posts might not be as good as they used to, but it's still the same disorders going on.
And, you know, everyone's just as mentally normal as they've ever been.
And, you know, I mean, like, I know there are worse Reddits out there that, you know, if you're considering banning one, but none as personally offensive to me. So cheers to Reddit, the CEO of Reddit, for finally doing what, you know, I endeavored to accomplish on my own. And by that, well, I mean, I did literally nothing, but...
Some of your family connections, right?
Will's dad. Will's dad. A lot of people don't know this. Will's dad was a Redditor at the New Yorker.
Yeah.
Will's dad was a moderator of r/New Yorker and was responsible for like some very respected threads in the '70s. Like, you know, here are some heckin' chonkers at the Flatiron Building or fucking whatever.
Yeah, they had like a drawing of like a guy coming home, like just a line drawing of a guy coming home, and then a birthday cake, and there's birthday cake all over his dog's mouth, and then Will's dad would put like captions at the bottom, like and he would write like the N-word at the bottom.
Reddit stuff like that.
Classic, you know, Reddit stuff edgy, like that.
That's how Will got a job on the computer.
Yeah. Well, you know, look, God's justice will find all of these sickos eventually. But I'm hoping, you know, now that they're both banned, I mean, there's always been a sort of healthy antagonism between your subreddit and ours. And that was my
understanding as well.
Yeah, your subredditors were very, were very, very cruel and nasty.
This is a true fact. They had some sort of script written where if you had posted on the Chapo subreddit more than once or twice, bot would pop up and point you out as a Chapo poster.
That's very funny. It would say like Chapo, like the Chapo detector bot.
Yeah, and they had a term for people from that subreddit that is very, very. I guess I call it un-PC.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean that is funny. Yeah, that is. Oh man, no, it's a great war. I guess that is the grand culture war of the internet. Like, you know, y'all versus trying to remember things you heard on Legion of Skanks.
Yeah,
just shoot those
at those. Those are the two internet.
I wonder if the ONA Reddit okay? Did they take?
I hope
down?
So.
I want to check it on the those. Come on,
I fucking hope so.
If they, that's I think more serious. Those guys have been there for decades. You know,
those guys are part of the foundation.
If they got rid of the ONA subreddit, then that's really spitting in the face.
That's
of
burning the Library of Alexandria, basically.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, I mean, like I know, it was sort of like our subreddit became sort of the de facto clearinghouse for all, you know, epic leftist shit posting or whatever. And it got to the point where I think like it only had a tangential connection to the show. And then I think people are lamenting that loss of a sort of a leftist shit posting space. But, you know, I mean, look, you can always just start a new subreddit, right?
Yeah.
I mean, how difficult could that be?
I would just like to not have my show's name attached to terrible memes. We'll have our own terrible memes. Yeah, I don't want to be responsible for someone else's bad memes.
Yeah, if you want to make those memes, it's like, it's a fucking stock photo of like a man looking at a woman and the woman's labeled like postmodernism and the man is labeled like late capitalism, my boss, depression, anxiety, my therapist, me, my husband, don't say it, the restaurant Wendy's, this is Wendy's, the fucking MAGA chuds, liberals, these are the same, gritty. You could do that with, so just do that, say that you're doing it for like Pod Save America.
Or rather, you know what? Do something healthy. Go outside and just start shouting the gritty memes from a street corner like an actual insane person.
No, yeah. Go to a coffee shop and when they ask you what you want, just be like, liberals, both these things are the same.
Mm-hmm.
You just pull up two headlines and put them side by side and say normal world.
Well, I was going to say, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, there are probably listeners of the show that, you know, are annoyed at us taking this unseemly victory lap over, you know, our own subreddit.
I'm not taking a victory lap. It's part of life and death. I don't give a shit. You know, I don't like it doesn't affect me one way or the other, whether it exists or doesn't. I just think it's funny when an internet forum gets banned.
Well, I was going to say though. I mean, if you are annoyed by us joking about this on the show, you can always go to your favorite subreddit. And nope, you can't anymore. You can't.
All right,
anymore.
Well, you can email Virgil. That's yes, still a possibility.
No, yeah, that is still the main forum for actual fans of the show. You can email Virgil like comments, complaints, just to check in. He likes being asked how he is. You can still do that.
I think people have been asking Nick if he could do anything about it today.
He sent us that
video of Mufasa falling off the rock and then Scar digging his nails into
them. Please save us.
I was going to say, I mean, like, you know, if some new subreddits are going to bloom, I would like to take this opportunity to have... You know, I think someone should start a new subreddit that is the synthesis of the Chapo and Cumtown fan communities that is only for fans who listen and enjoy both programs. Because I think that is the
most
sweet
enlightened
spot.
Of fans.
Because that is a subreddit that I would be proud to, you know, be associated with and not, you know,
those are people who can wrangle. They can wrangle conflicts and contradictions and resolve them in their minds.
The cool thing about the ONA Reddit, and the reason I hope it wasn't taken down is because you can really see how a community can grow out of one thing and then become something totally different. Because that hasn't been a show on the radio for years, but there are still thousands of posts a day on that Reddit. And they're like, I mean, they like harass Anthony Cumia's like brother who lives on Long Island and has a covers band. And they're just like, they've made it their life's work, you know? To follow these people.
Well, you know, salutes up to all the fallen subreddits. I'm sure a million more will be created, you know, this afternoon. So
just start a forum. You could start your own forum. There's not like in fact, it's a better format than Reddit. You don't have to pay money for gold, or maybe if you're like an enterprising guy, you could maybe have people pay $10 to register. I don't know.
Here's an idea. Move to the woods. Build a shack. Mail packages to airline executives and college professors.
Wait, why? But why did the Chapo Reddit get taken down?
All right, I know the background of this.
Yeah.
It happened. It's been under quarantine for months. I don't even know what that means. You have to. I think it just means you have to click to say you're agreeing to go into it because it's dangerous or something. But it got quarantined because they were doing epic memes about how slave owners deserve to die, which in 2019 or whatever, I mean, pretty shocking and edgy stuff, I have to say.
Yeah.
Like, oh man, if John C. Calhoun was here right now, oh boy, I would dab all over him. I'd
kick his ass.
Yeah.
That's like Mitch's bit about giving death threats to celebrities who like just recently died.
Yes.
One of the greatest bits.
People took it seriously that they got quarantined for advocating violence. And so they've been like on the shit list. And so what I think happened is Reddit decides, yeah, we don't want to be in the spotlight in this moment of like highly tense racial politics and a very intensive media focused atmosphere. We don't want to be connected to things that are going to refrowned badly to the general website, and things like the Donald and stuff are sort of the flagship for that. And so, but you don't want to alienate all the conservatives who use your platform. So you make a sacrificial goat out of someone on the other side to show balance.
My understanding, the reason that Cumtown subreddit was private was because in their battle with the Chapo subreddit, there were Chapo fans that were going in and posting racial slurs in the Cumtown Reddit in order to get it banned for racism.
Oh my god, that is so Gladio
funny.
Shit.
Which is
that,
so
they false flagged.
That's which yeah, exactly. And that's it's funny because if you assume who those guys are like the care lords
yeah. That must have been just weeping as they typed those words out. Just like, it's for the greater good. It's for the greater good.
They printed out a picture of John Brown and were apologizing to it. No, I have to do this.
They had the same look on their face as George did when he, like, you know, drawed a bead on Lenny, just asking, hey, think of the rabbits, Lenny, as they typed out the N word on just come down subreddit. God. You know, they had a single tear rolling down their cheek.
That's so funny. They hated each other.
Yeah.
Each other. They should have been fighting forever.
I mean, we all love each other, though. So, like, you know, what does that tell
we're
you?
All friends.
What is that? I mean, I would like, honestly, as long as we're complaining about Reddit, I would like the CEO of Reddit to do something about the fact that literally every post on Am I the Asshole and Our Relationships is 1,000% fake.
Seriously, get some fucking quality control on this.
I would like some kind of betting and fact-checking on these stories that people write to go viral. Yeah. I'm tired of looking at them.
I'm so sick of people just posting and repost, like, who've never seen a fake post in their life, getting like 20,000 retweets for being like, so saw this today, and it's just the most obvious fucking fake post I've ever seen. Am I the asshole for killing my wife? And it's like, what the fuck?
There was, I think, one thing. It was like on Reddit like parenting forum, and there was the post that went mega viral was like, purporting to be parents who had raised their child from birth to believe that they were a wizard in the world of Harry Potter, and that eventually they were going to get to go to Hogwarts and were able to do magic, and they were just sort of asked, how do we ease our child into breaking the news to them that none of this is true? And everyone was just like, oh, can you believe this? Oh, just look at that kid's therapy bills later. And I'm just like, there's no child. This is made up. This is not real. It didn't happen.
Hey, Chapo, you see these libs corn-cubbed? They raised their kid to be Harry Potter. They're Karens. They're calling the manager. No, that's just enough of that. Fucking get rid of it.
I hope they haven't touched r/small dick problems. That's the only one that I want.
That's a good one.
Those guys need each other.
Well,
that's one of the only like lasting true communities of friendship.
I know.
Yeah,
we did an entire episode on Cumtown about
their small penises.
Yeah, the best is when big dick guys go in from r/big dick problems. They go to console them. They're like, hey, just so you know, it's not that good.
Not that great. Every time I get hard,
I can't do every position because my penis is too big. And then the small dick problems guys ban them and get furious. And they're like, I would just for one day, just to hurt a woman with my penis one time, I would die tomorrow. It's almost like this fucking asshole.
It's almost like Reddit, you know, just as a phenomenon, is just a giant honeypot for antisocial personalities to get even worse.
Not like Twitter. That doesn't happen.
No,
there at
Twitter's
all.
Good. No. All right. Well, moving on from online drama, let's go to some drama that's happening in the real world. Because this is an update to our last episode in which Virgil brought up some sort of like vigilante groups forming to protect the incredibly shitty statues in The Villages, Florida. And wouldn't you know it, things have popped off even further since we last talked about The Villages, which was just on our last episode. I'm reading here from local news site CBS 12 in Florida. Trump supporters and anti-Trump protesters clash in The Villages, president chimes in. A pro-Trump parade made up of golf carts encountered some anti-Trump protesters in The Villages, which is in Central Florida. Video of the encounter was posted to Twitter and it caught the president's eye. The now viral video shows a parade of electric carts decked out with pro-Trump paraphernalia parading down a street before reaching a group of protesters holding anti-Trump signs. In the video, the president retweeted, then deleted, with the comment, "Thank you to the great people of The Villages. One man in a golf cart is heard screaming white power, while a woman can be seen heard shouting fuck Trump as the parade passes by. No one is seen wearing a mask or following social distancing guidelines. The Villages is well known for its elderly and retired population." So yeah, that was a bit of a controversy to come out of The Villages, is that the president promoted that video of a guy from a sort of a armada of golf carts yelling white power at an anti-Trump protest. So that was going on today, and then he deleted the tweet like a coward.
I just want to know, when are they gonna bust out irons? When are they gonna put the lead to it? What are you doing? That's how you believe problems are solved, is through violence. Let's see a good old fashioned fucking Donnybrook Villages Civil War.
Yeah, I would love to be the Johnny Adair of the villages.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's turn it into Belfast.
Yeah.
Throw up some peace walls. Just huck fucking rocks over the top of it each other.
I would love
to
see
what statues there.
Yeah, they. I've, oh god, who are the statues of?
The statues are of the two schmucks who created the villages.
It's like
Sid and Marty.
Yeah, Romulus and Remus.
I was gonna say it's like Sid and Marty Croft. It's like statues of them who've created a universe.
Leopold
of,
and Loeb.
Muppets. Yeah.
Didn't Leopold move to Florida?
I think he might have.
After yeah,
it's probably it's the no state income tax. That was the thing that brought him there. But the villages shit is popping off. But, you know, I would love that you said like they should make it like Belfast in the 80s. And I was just wondering, I would love to see what some of the murals in the pro-Trump section of the villages would look like.
Oh, my God.
It was just like, it'd be like a giant like wall painted with Dan Bongino's head, his big square head. Yeah. And it was just like Freedom Fighter. Banned.
Yeah, it would be like Robert E. Lee, Grimace, the Israeli flag, like Bolsonaro's dumbest son, just like wall of solidarity.
They would put.
I want to know what the lib wall in villages would be.
It would be like MSNBC stuff. But
Rachel Maddow smiling upon them, like looking like Mao.
In Falls Road in Belfast, they have all these murals to like international solidarity with other like kind of like nationalist guerrilla movements.
The Palestinians.
Yeah, Palestinians and the Kurds and like there's a lot of that stuff and like, you know, anti-Israeli stuff. And so I was thinking like, you know, the Trump wall in the villages, they could have solidarity with, like you said, Felix, Bolsonaro, Duterte, Kim Jong-un, depending on if it's a good day for him or not, you know.
Viktor Orban.
Yeah, Viktor Orban.
The pro-Trump people could chip in their money to do a Manhattan Project-style research program to create a 100-foot-long Big Mouth Billy Bass to put on the wall.
There's going to be like an Operation Paperclip to find the most racist next door posters in the entire country and bring them to the villages.
Yeah.
You've made 500 next door posts because you heard a Lou Bega song. Instead of gang activity. We need you here.
Nick Fury shows up at your front door. I want to talk to you about the Villages Initiative.
Operation Golf Cart.
That should be retirement for like if you were part of like the Phoenix program or something. This should be like, this is your retirement project.
Well, moving on here. I mean, as long as we're talking about cold wars that are heating up, could one of you explain to me this story that I've been seeing a lot about how Russia has been paying bounties to the Taliban to murk U.S. soldiers in Afghanistan? Because people are riled up about this. This is the latest, you know, sort of date that will live in infamy. The final last straw of Trump's, you know, traitorous presidency is that, you know, apparently he was briefed on this a couple months ago and then didn't do anything about it. But like, I don't know what all the people, like all the libs and the MSNBC types that are so incensed about this, what do they want Trump to do? Escalate the war in Afghanistan or like, you know, attack Russia? I mean, what's going on with this? Yeah.
Yeah, they want brinksmanship with Russia to prove that Trump isn't secretly a Putin puppet. So any time that he doesn't sanction Russia or do some terrifying piece of military buildup around Russia or antagonize Russia, then he's doing their bidding.
I'm just reading here for the New York Times the headline: Russia secretly offered Afghan militants bounties to kill U.S. troops, intelligence says. The Trump administration has been deliberating for months about what to do about a stunning intelligence assessment. And this has got like, you know, three different people's names on the byline of this New York Times article, but like only one source, feeding them this, you know, intelligence. And given the New York Times history with this, it's pretty funny to read. But I'm just reading here at the top. It says American intelligence officials have concluded that a Russian military intelligence unit secretly offered bounties to Taliban-linked militants for killing coalition forces in Afghanistan, including targeting American troops amid the peace talks to end the long-running war there, according to officials briefed on the matter. The United States concluded months ago that the Russian unit, which has been linked to assassination attempts and other covert operations in Europe, intended to destabilize the West or take revenge on turncoats, had covertly offered rewards for successful attacks last year. And I like the idea that like all the coalition forces that are there to, you know, kill people, it's like they're just doing their job. The fair is fair. But like, you know, they're not destabilizing the region or this country by, you know, by extension, by just simply being there and drawing out this disastrous longest war in human. But I mean, it's just like are the coalition forces that are there killing people are doing their correct and rightly ordered job, and then the Russians who are just, you know, giving people a little loot crate for fucking smoking a U.S. troop or whatever. And it's just like, why the fuck? I mean, if we don't want these bounties getting paid to you know, kill U.S. troops, how about they just not be in Afghanistan? That would seem to be like the correct way to deal with this intelligence assessment.
Well, that is my question for people. Like, A, you know, as has been pointed out, this is incredibly thinly sourced. It hasn't been verified by anyone but, you know, anonymous fucking NatSec community sources, which, yeah, sorry, not fucking good enough. Not good enough for this.
Well, I don't know. Anonymous intelligence community sources in the New York Times. When has that ever steered anyone wrong?
New York Times, you're right. But yeah, that is the thing, because it's like, what should we do? Everyone who's fucking is just convinced this is happening. What the fuck should we do? Because we've sanctioned Russia to the hilt. If you're telling me this is still happening, then what the fuck is it doing? Should we stay in Afghanistan forever? Should we open up another front against the Russians? Should we openly fight the Russians in Afghanistan? Should we fucking pay the Taliban more to kill the – like, what the fuck do you want? Should we go in a bidding war for the Haqqanis against the Russians? What the fuck do you want? What are we doing? What the fuck are we doing here?
People – they're vibing, okay? People are just trying to – one day at a time. That's the U.S. attitude towards Afghanistan.
Yeah.
This is literally
the only thing we're patient on, this fucking war.
Well, no, I mean, like, what I like about this story, and I think, like, the reason people have sort of caught on to it, and by the way, this story has gotten 10,000 times more media attention and controversy than the giant Washington Post piece that came out last year that covered like the entire secret history of the Afghan war, that showed that like three different presidential administrations has conspired to fucking cover up, has just lied openly to cover up the fucking slaughterhouse that they've helped create in that country, and have, you know, lied to the press and the public repeatedly for decades now about their conduct during the Afghan war. That story came and went like that. But because this is a presidential year, election year now, and people think Trump is vulnerable, they're really, you know, they're pushing this one as far as it can go. And I think the reason people are responding to it is because it's sort of like a story that they get, because I think it calls to mind similar pseudo controversies like in the NFL when it comes out that, like, I don't know, like the Pittsburgh Steelers defensive coordinator was paying bounties to players to, you know, for injuries on other star players on opposing teams, where it's just like people, you know, they get outraged about that in the NFL, but they still like watching a game that is literally played by causing brain damage to all involved. And they're like, it's just sort of like with this, it's just like, oh, you're telling me, oh, they're paying bounties to kill soldiers in a war, where it's like, well, what the fuck do you think our soldiers have been doing there for 20 fucking years now? It's just sort of like, if there's a monetary incentive to it. Hey, what if I told you that, like we said, you could lease a Dodge Charger for killing people in Afghanistan. Is that a bounty that's being paid out by the U.S. government? Seems like it to me.
Some of those kill teams actually did have bounties on how many Afghans they killed. I'm just wondering, what if the U.S. government, the CIA, had only offered bounties on Russian soldiers in the 80s in Afghanistan? That would have been a model of restraint compared to actively giving them Stinger missiles to shoot down helicopters with, which is what we actually did.
Yeah, funneling hundreds of millions, if not billions, of Saudi money into just God knows where, into Haqqani, into other things there, through Saudi intelligence. Just put it wherever, it ends up wherever, whatever happens, who gives a shit, it's not your country. But, I mean, this is sort of like the perfect, for the libs now who are feeling their oats, because yeah, Trump is very weak, this is the perfect story, this is the perfect Biden story, because it's saying the U.S. empire is being managed poorly.
Yeah.
That's the whole crux of it.
We get Biden in there and he's going to shoo those Russians out of there with a big cartoon broom, like the Sandman at the Apollo Theater. Yeah. Going to sweep all those Russians out of there, and we're finally going to win.
Then we can be in that fucking country forever. Don't worry about it.
Hell yeah. Fuddruckers in Kandahar. It's coming.
Yeah. Yeah, don't worry. Other people's kids are going to fight for some vague national glory of this war that the entire fucking world knows we lost. Who the fuck are we fooling at this point?
Not who what's amazing is not even ourselves. Because as Will pointed out, we have the fucking Afghan papers showing that this whole thing has been a fraud the whole time. There's no plan to win. There's no way to win. And we were just all like, yeah, but that's just what it is now. We're in Afghanistan. Everyone's dying of opium. Who isn't dying of coronavirus? Who isn't dying of gun violence? And there's no solution to any of these problems because we have lost the capacity to manage our own affairs. Everything is going on through its own momentum, and we're just being carried along down the hill. And it'd be very nice if the Russians would not get in there and make it harder for us in this thing that we have no choices about over. But yeah, I would like to stress it is most likely complete bullshit.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. Yeah. I don't doubt that Russia is up to some bullshit. Like, no one should be occupying that country is what I'm saying. But that said, no one who's fucking raising a thing about this story, they have no positive vision for Afghanistan. Their vision is that Americans go and kill and fucking die, and Afghans die for what? So you can go back to fucking watching Will and Grace. So you can feel good when you close your eyes thinking about this country and the conduct of empire.
I mean, yeah, imagine if Russia was just giving out challenge coins to Taliban militants for every grisly atrocity they're perpetrated against, you know, American soldiers. I mean, imagine that. Imagine if a military was giving out trinkets to its soldiers for every fucking war crime that they carried out. I mean, that would really be something if that were a real thing that took place and happened in this world.
Remember when the captain of the USS Vincennes got a medal for shooting down an Iranian passenger plane?
Mm-hmm. And George H.W. Bush, one of the good Republicans, said, "I will never apologize for my country, right or wrong."
Yeah.
Well, moving on, but this is connected because it very much has to do with a guy who was president for 8 years of the Afghanistan war. I'm talking about Barack Obama. And if you guys haven't felt nauseated yet, this New York Times article is sure to bring you there. This is an account of how Obama has shaken off the doldrums of retirement to assert himself into the American political theater once again and preserve his legacy and save the country. This is a headline, "How the Trump Campaign is Drawing Obama Out of Retirement." He's like John Wick, basically. Yeah, Trump, he killed Bo Obama, and Obama was saving that for Christmas dinner. And, you know, he's thinking, it was a gift from Tony Rezko. It was the last thing he gave him. It was the guy in the limousine tipped him with a puppy. And this is the, and you know, is Obama back? Yeah, I'm thinking he's back. So listen to this. "Just after Donald J. Trump was elected president, Barack Obama slumped in his chair in the Oval Office and addressed an aide standing near a conspicuously placed bowl of apples, emblem of a healthy snacking policy soon to be swept aside, along with so much else. 'I am so done with all of this,' Mr. Obama said of his job, according to several people familiar with the exchange."
Who's Barack?
Yeah, you really busted.
Are you tired of signing to kill Whisperwalk? I know it hurts you with a whist.
What I love about this is it's the conspicuously placed bowl of apples, the emblem of the healthy snacking policy soon to be
this
swept aside.
This is what
aside.
They've taken
that's,
from us.
That's
healthy
the thing that they're
snacking.
Leading with. Is that's what Trump is going to come in and get rid of, is all of the healthy snacks being offered to America. You know, forget the Iran deal or the Affordable Care Act or like any of the federal judiciary. No, what will be swept aside in this new reactionary tide is healthy snacks.
You know, they
say
apple a day keeps the doctor away. Are we totally sure that if Trump hadn't come in there and ended the snacking policy, the corona even would have been an issue?
Well, you know, an apple a day, better that than dealing with one of these healthcare exchanges. Am I right, folks? So going on here, it says, "There is no model for my kind of post-presidency," he told the aide. "I'm clearly renting space in that guy's head." Oh, fucking corn cob, the bitch.
Oh, God, fuck off.
He won, you dumb bitch.
He just took all your shit, your apples and everything else, and just swept it off the table with his Cheeto dust-soaked fucking hands.
And he canceled literally every accomplishment of Obama on day one. It was done.
He owned your ass!
He wrecked him.
Which is not to say that Mr. Obama was not committed to use his pre-Trump retirement vision, a placid life that was to consist of writing sun-flecked fairways, policy work through his foundation, producing documentaries with Netflix, and family time aplenty at his new $11.7 million spread on Martha's Vineyard. The stakes of that re-engagement were always going to be high. Mr. Obama is nothing if not protective of his legacy, especially in the face of Mr. Trump's many attacks. Yet interviews with more than 50 people in the former president's orbit portray a conflicted combatant trying to balance deep anger at his successor with an instinct to refrain from a brawl that he fears may dent his popularity and challenge his place in history. He goes here, he is doing so very carefully, characteristically intent on keeping his cool, his reputation, his political capital, and his dreams of a cosseted retirement intact. I don't think he is hesitant. I think he is strategic, said Dan Pfeiffer, our old friend, top advisor for over a decade. He has always been strategic about using his voice. It is his most valuable commodity. Oh, it's just, I mean, if this is the retirement he wanted, I mean, couldn't he have just stuck to that? Because, I mean,
has he actually produced anything for Netflix?
Yeah. He did a movie. He did a show about a Chinese company opening an American factory, like a documentary, sort of like Gung Ho, but real.
Called The Factory.
Yeah.
Is that good?
Most of the other videos he's produced are only available for private screenings in the discreet homes of certain well-connected people in the entertainment industry and finance, if you know what I mean.
Going on here, it says many...
It seems like the only thing he did is just rat-fuck Bernie.
Yeah, that's where I'm going with this article.
That seems like the only thing he's actually accomplished as in his post-presidency in 4 years.
Yeah, no, it's just like he stayed silent, you know, because, he wanted to preserve his calm, cool, collected, presentation of himself as well as his legacy. So he's preserving his legacy. And the biggest thing he's done in that regard is make it absolutely certain that Joe Biden will be the Democratic nominee for president.
Hell yes.
And it's like, that's your legacy, dude. Hope you're fucking happy with it. That's what people are going to think of you, if they think of you at all after Trump, is making
sure. Do you think Mayor Pete did the Obama voice when he called him and told him to drop out?
Yeah, there was a bunch of feedback in the... They couldn't hold the phone to their heads because they kept getting the feedback popping in because they had the identical vocal frequency.
He did. He went into Obama.
Mr. President, let me be clear. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. Oh, golly.
Yeah, he was just sitting on hold waiting for Obama to come on and going, hello, Mayor Pete. You're quite good at turning me on.
I'd like to imagine the hold music while you're waiting for Obama to get on the phone it's all just selections from CDs that are sold at Starbucks.
Yeah. It's Jason Mraz, Nora Jones joint effort.
Going on, he says, many supporters have been pressing him to be more aggressive. It would be nice for a change if Barack Obama could emerge from his cave and demand a way forward, the columnist Drew Marjorie wrote in his much-shared Medium post in April titled, Where the Hell is Barack Obama? The counter argument, he did his job and deserves to be left alone.
No, yeah, look how well he did. Look what a good job he did.
That reminds me when he, like, his first public appearance after going parasailing with Richard Branson, his first public appearance was that to talk at, like, Goldman Sachs, right?
Yeah.
And then people were like, you can't tell a black president how he can make his living. That was like the defense of it, right?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, going on.
Oh, you had no problem with all these white presidents taking money. The best thing was they weren't even saying, they were saying, you want him to speak to Goldman Sachs for free?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was great.
And by the way, he had already signed a $65 million publishing contract for his memoir of his two terms in office.
Has it dropped?
No, he's still writing it right now. But he says,
hurry up. He's like George R.R. Martin. Fucking drop it already. Christ.
To your point, about-
my favorite thing people would say was when they would go, Obama doesn't owe you anything. And it's like, he was president. He ran for president. He ran for all of our approval.
And quite frankly, I mean, if he was president for two terms and, you know, I voted for him at least one of those times, the first time. Considering what he accomplished as president, yeah, he owes me a lot. He owes us all a great fucking deal, considering what he actually did in office.
Well, yeah, he gave us Donald Trump. I mean, it's his fault.
But he goes here, to your point about how, don't tell Obama he can't speak at Goldman Sachs. Quote here, it says, Obama has now been out of office for 3.5 years, and he is still facing this kind of scrutiny. No one is pressuring white ex-presidents like George W. Bush and Jimmy Carter the same way, said Monique Judge, news editor of the online magazine The Root, and author of a 2018 article arguing Mr. Obama no longer owed the country a thing. Well, first of all, if you're talking about Jimmy Carter...
That's such a ridiculous argument, though.
Jimmy Carter gets shit on all the fucking time for being, like, mildly critical of Israel. And if you're talking about George W. Bush, I mean, the model is not to just warmly embrace everything a fucking ex-president does. All this fucking guy had to do was start painting portraits of his fucking victims, sort of similar to your experience.
I think they're pretty good, honestly.
I mean, yeah, they are pretty good, but it's bad. Like, you know, it's like John Wayne Gacy. That's all it took for him to be fucking... That and give a piece of, like, a Werther's original to Michelle Obama... That's all he had to do to be fucking fully embraced as like a decent man who, you know, say what you will about him. At least he loved his country and had a decency to him. It's like, were you awake during the George Bush administration, W. Bush? Because he has not an ounce of humanity in him. I mean, the guy, he's like one of the worst monsters ever to occupy the Oval Office. So like, I don't think the standard that we should be holding ex-presidents to is just totally uncritical embrace of them and everything they've done, and just to allow them to ease into a life of just absolute splendor and comfort, and just, you know, frictionless praise and fucking veneration from the public and media alike. But Mr. Obama's head appears to be somewhere in the middle. He is not planning to scrap his summer vineyard vacation and is still anguishing over the publication of his long-awaited memoir. But last week, he stepped up his nominally indirect criticism of Mr. Trump's administration, decrying a shambolic, disorganized, mean-spirited approach to governance during an online Biden fundraiser. So, going on here, I had to like sort of term the keyword search the article for Bernie Sanders, because this is what I was wondering if they were going to address this at all, because this is, as you mentioned, Adam, this is the only actual like meaningful thing he's done with his power and his post presidency is behind the scenes to intervene as strongly as possible in the Democratic primary, if not fix it outright from the beginning to make sure that Joe Biden got the nomination, his guy. Mm-hmm. And in doing that, to coordinate the, you know, Super Tuesday mass dropout of Klobuchar and Buttigieg at the exact same time. And lest we forget, Elizabeth Warren staying in at the same time to really stick the knife in Bernie and finish his chances of getting the nomination. But it says here, Mr. Obama was supportive of Mr. Biden personally from the start of the campaign, but he promised Senator Bernie Sanders in one of their early chats that his public profession of neutrality was genuine and that he was not working secretly to elect his friend, according to party official familiar with the exchange. God, I hope Bernie Sanders believed that.
Well, that settles that.
Yeah. Still, he is an enthusiastic supporter and played a central role in pushing Mr. Sanders to accelerate the end game, quote, that led to Mr. Biden's earlier than expected victory in April. He spent the next few weeks tidying up a few messy political loose ends, working to improve his chilly relationship with Senator Elizabeth Warren, who irked him by criticizing Wall Street speaking fees as emblematic of the scourge of money in politics, calling it, quote, a snake that slithers through Washington. See, so she fired the first shot about calling someone a snake.
Well, she's right.
Yeah. So I mean, like, I'm not gonna. There's not much more in this article, but I just thought it was a you know, just all the details about how, you know, he was just really hoping to spend some time in, you know, on America's own midsummer island in Martha's Vineyard and just produce Netflix documentaries and write a book that preserves his legacy. But, you know, unfortunately, he's had to come out of retirement to lightly criticize Donald Trump and. Largely, I mean, it is mentioned, but it's not given the weight it should in this article, is that like his only meaningful intervention was fixing the Democratic primary to the extent that that was possible.
I mean, if he's going to be a producer now, like, get Doug Elin on the phone, get Mark Wahlberg on the phone, and let's bring back Entourage, all right?
Netflix is the perfect fucking platform for a relaunched Entourage.
Give us another 100 seasons of Entourage. Let's bring peace. Let's bring some modicum of normalcy back.
And we could have Obama cameo. He could chair like a peace conference between Johnny Drama and Turtle over some sort of e-cigarette based business dispute that they have.
Yes, exactly. He could give them his basketball tickets if they're trying to get into a big game. And Obama can show up and, like, give him their tickets. And they could be like, oh, my God, it's the president. It's President Obama. It's the freaking president. Oh, my God. It's the president.
Turtle, I believe you're sitting in my seat. It's time for you to go.
Oh, you're not friends with Barack Obama? I've been friends with him for years. He helped me with Avion Tequila at the launch. He was friends with Saigon, the rapper that I signed in season 2.
Jesus Christ, man. That guy's a loser. I
sucks.
Hate Obama.
Fuck him.
He sucks. I hate him worse than Bush at this point.
Oh, absolutely. Because
I wouldn't go that far,
he did all this shit for nothing. He did all this shit just to be the asshole with the shitty mansion in St. Louis, just to do that. He did all of that stuff. He became president. He ate the adrenochrome. He sat in the vaulted chamber looking into Satan's assholes that opens up at the top of a pyramid of blood so that he could produce a fucking Netflix special and jet ski. Like, he couldn't have done that as a senator. Just no imagination. Like, our bad guys aren't even motivated by any sort of grand strategic vision like a Nixon or a Kissinger anymore. They're just the most striving little fucking hollow assholes who just want to be famous, which is the worst thing you could possibly want to be.
Yeah, Bush at least wanted to impress his dad.
Exactly. There's some psychology there.
Yeah, Obama, like, what do you think Obama would see if he went on a DMT journey and, like, ventured to the center of his spirit to saw his most core desire? Like, what does he see?
The Food and Wine Festival in Aspen, where he gets to meet the winner of Top Chef.
Yeah, no, that's it. Just a completely dull man. Kind of a very good predecessor to Trump, because they both mirror each other's lack of imagination.
Yeah.
And the complete death of any vision in their respective movements.
So Obama, good luck to that guy.
Yeah, see you,
take
Obama.
A hike.
Go bungle somewhere else.
Hey, get this. Thanks, Obama. Being sarcastic there.
Nice.
That was good, dude.
All right. Well,
I wish there was a place on the internet you could have posted that.
All right. Well, to round out today, I have a reading series to cap off this episode that is a return to form for us. This guy lives in the Chapo Pantheon. He was featured in a reading series on our second ever episode, the episode where things really took off and we were like, hey, We got a little something here. We got a little lightning in the bottle. I'm talking, of course, about, as Felix referred to him on that episode, Cold Stone Steve Austin. I'm speaking, of course, about the National Review's roving correspondent of Kevin D. Williamson.
Roving correspondent's such a good name. Because
it is such,
like,
a good name.
It's like Peeping Tom correspondent.
Yeah. You know, it's like roving correspondent is the title they give you when, like, you have no area of expertise or knowledge in any given subject, but you certainly like to stalk suburban subdivisions, sort of glowering in people's front yards. And this is exactly what this article is all about. This is an article so pointless and pretentious that it could only come from a roving correspondent. This is, of course, it's called Blowin' in the Wind. The subhead is The Leaf Blower Man and America's Contempt for Public Spaces. Yes,
oh boy.
Kevin D. Williamson has written an entire article on how leaf blowers annoy him and what that says about America in 2020.
Oh, hell yeah. Now, this is the shit I love, where you've just lost even the barest filigree of ideology and you are just purely raging about the thing that is annoying you in front of you, the Andy Rooney move.
As I read this article, I'd like to stress once again that think back to the moment in which Kevin D. Williamson was unceremoniously dumped from his new perch at the Atlantic, when it came out that he did actually believe all those things he said and wrote about how women who obtain an abortion should be executed by the state, preferably by hanging, as he suggested. There were a lot of people who, like, you know, before it became obvious that they couldn't defend any of these things he actually said, we're sort of trying to be like, look, you know, yes, he has some controversial points of view and, you know, he's an unapologetic conservative in his beliefs, but you got to give the guy this. He really can churn out a sentence. You know, his prose really sings. So I would just like you to keep that in mind as you read this unbearably ponderous and tedious article. So let's just go in here. He says, begins, on Sundays, I get up early to hear the word. On Saturdays, I get up early to hear the leaf blower. Saturdays are for the boys, Kevin. You know, what can I tell you? Traffic noise, or that vacuum cleaner that runs around 70 decibels. A loud alarm clock is about 80 decibels. A leaf blower, by the way of comparison, punishes those nearby with about 115 decibels, midway between the noise of a car horn, 110, and a jetliner taking off, 120. I do not usually sleep very late, but I do not get up early as Hortulanus Americanus, the leaf blower man, and his colleagues. So he created his own sort of Latin genus specification of leaf blower man, Hortulanus Americanus.
Will you, Dave Barry? Shut the fuck up.
Yeah. A very special species, the lawnmower, has a distinct breeding pattern. This is terrible.
The leaf blower man and his colleagues work from dawn to dusk, their almost unvaried white pickup trucks prowling and parking, sometimes 4 or 5 blocks on a busy day where I live, constricting the typically wide residential avenues in my town to practically European proportions. The nice people around here can hardly get their Audis past one another. If you do not think very hard about the legal situation, more than a fifth of the landscaping workforce is composed of illegal immigrants, and there is some reason to believe that some of these outfits are less than scrupulous about payroll taxes and the like, there is much to admire about the entrepreneurial spirit and work ethic on display. So he's like, yeah, there's much to admire about them if you allow yourself for even a second to forget that they're all filthy alien viruses invading our country and not paying payroll tax. Love the hustle, hate the noise. An unexpected episode of the coronavirus quarantine. Many of our gardens have never looked so good. We had a fine spring that is turning into a hot summer, and with the golf courses barricaded and gyms shuttered, the bourgeoisie, who in the course of our workdays seldom lift anything heavier than money, had no place to get exercise. And so we turned to our yards and gardens. What to plant? There is a superstition that lavender repels mosquitoes, so I planted 2 kinds. I dug up old grass and planted better grass, and of course, there were tools to buy. I do not like the noise, and I do not like the smell of gasoline. My motorcycle is relatively quiet, and a clean one. And if you want to avoid that unpleasantness and also get some exercise, then the thing is an old-fashioned real mower, which is a human-powered rather than gasoline or electricity. And so I get to have some experience of being a kind of bipedal draft animal. Oh, this is just, they're letting him publish his diary. This is just him scribbling notes about what I did today.
I heard a very rude lawnmower outside. I was sad.
I just like, over the course of this one paragraph, he establishes that he lives in some kind of rich suburban cul-de-sac in which people, there's golf courses nearby and people drive Audis. So it's like fairly well off. And then he tags himself as being a member of the bourgeoisie, the sort of the money lifting class. But then he says, just so you know, in addition to loud noises frightening me, I also very much dislike the smell of gasoline. But then he makes sure parenthetically to let you know that he also drives a motorcycle, but it's a quiet and clean one. This is Williams.
Is it like, does he drive on it with his twin on weekends? Is he allowed to go by himself?
He goes here, my neighbors look at me a little funny, possibly because I'm the only man on the block who cuts his own grass.
I do it while wearing a cape.
Yeah, I was going to say, Kevin, they're looking at you funny because of the way you look and dress, not because that you're pushing a lawnmower up and down your fucking garden. He goes, and in some ways, the real mower really does not work all that well, but I'd rather push that contraption over the same spot 6 times than get the job done with a single sweep of a gasoline lawnmower. I can let my mind wander and then finish up with a perfectly good piece of medieval technology, a broom.
Who gives a shit? Shut the fuck up!
He's like, I wouldn't.
No one cares.
I wouldn't lower myself to ride around or push a gasoline-powered mower because this piece of shit that doesn't even work allows my brain to produce these reveries of thought that I will eventually craft into such a brilliant column such as this one, which I share the fact that I can use a broom with you, my dear reader. Leaf blower man watches this and smiles and roars and enchants into whirling motion a furious little cyclone of minced vegetation. God, you can really tell how happy he is writing, you know? You can really tell how much he likes.
Cyclone of minced vegetation!
Yeah. This prose is tough to read, but you can tell while writing it, he was like himself and shit.
Oh, yes. It's a minced vegetation.
He was
indeed.
Laughing. Yeah.
Oh, man. It's one of those guys who goes to a restaurant and he's like, oh, I'll have a potable and some comestibles. And then they just put like 50 pounds of pubes in his food in the fucking kitchen.
Yeah, this is like, this prose style is written for like pedophiles that live in hot air balloons. So it's like, what the fuck? Yeah, who enjoys this?
Who? Well, no, but at this point, like, who is reading the National Review? Because the Republican Party has changed so much, and there's been such an anti-intellectual bent. There's no, like, we're smart and we're Republican. Like, that's so out at this point.
It's other Cape guys. It's all other Cape guys who are also yelling $5 words at leaf blower guys who have headphones in and can't hear them.
This article is for people who have like a marble bust as their avi and walk around with a cane even though they don't need it, and when they see like a guy on a gasoline lawnmower, they're just like, this, the shabbiness of modernity is just thrust in my face every time I leave my castle. It goes on here. There's a lot of stuff about immigrants, and like, there's really no actual like political spleen venting here. He talks about how he spends a lot of time around immigrants, and he likes immigrants because they like America. And even though his family are of old stock, he feels sort of at home among immigrants. And then he goes back to talking about leaf blowers and America being a sort of convenient place to live, and the leaf blower is a pretty good emblem for them, and that it effectuates our inexplicable national contempt for public spaces. Leaf blower man is king of his castle. If he blows his yard waste into the street, that is someone else's problem, not my problem. Translate that into Latin and inscribe it on the Capitol rotunda. The leaf blower man blows his trash.
Rotunda, is that what they call you?
I don't know. I kind of like it now. I'm imagining like what's his name, Martin from The Simpsons, growing up.
Wait a minute, is he unhappy about the fact that in America we tend to take externalities from our actions and put them on the public and have that be unpriced? Unconsidered? Is he unhappy about that? Because it seems like the defining characteristic of American capitalism.
Matt, the subhead to this piece was leaf blower man and the American contempt for public spaces. I think if you'll remember back, the last Kevin D. Williamson reading series I did on this show was his article about how we should bring back public executions. So I think he wants to hear the snap of someone's neck or the fucking thud of a head on a tumbril. Instead of hearing a leaf blower whine.
So this guy's like, hey, are you guys, am I alone here? Or would you rather see a gallows than a leaf blower in public? Oh, I am alone. Oh, you're calling the police. Oh, I'm sorry. Never mind.
I think Adam gets to the heart of it here is that who is this for? And that like the National Review doesn't really have, I mean, its audience is just so diminished because it used to be like the intellectual engine of the conservative movement politics, and like they would always have that sort of that sheen on it, but now there's absolutely no need to have the sheen anymore. They've cut out the middleman entirely, and now it's the OANN network and Dan Bongino.
I mean, that's the best thing that Trump has done is made like the Republican Party like proud to be stupid.
When that wasn't the case, Kevin D. Williamson was much more of a fire breather. You know, he was courting controversy and sort of venting his sort of proud reactionary political spleen in these columns. And now that he's been fired from The Atlantic and, it's just sort of the political moment has passed him by. He had his sort of chance at, media celebrity, which is, of course, what all these people really crave. And he blew it with his idiotic opinions that he authored like a decade before. So life has passed him by. And it's just like he can't even sort of muster the energy to churn out like some good sort of fire breathing, condemnatory prose about, liberalism or immigrants or anything like that. He's just sharing his thoughts about how leaf blowers, sort of annoy him, and then just sort of grafting on Frankenstein like these like incredibly labored digressions about Americans and public space and immigration and sort of the American character, and it just goes on and on like this.
I gotta cut in for a second. In 2011, in an interview, when the final season of Entourage was airing, President Barack Obama claimed it was his favorite television show.
All right, well, this is going to happen. Let's do this. Come on, Brad. You don't have the vision to bring back Entourage? Nothing? Pathetic.
But, it's just like, I think you can make a connection here to what Kevin D. Williamson is doing. Because in Trump, you have a politics and a leader and a political movement that represents everything Kevin D. Williamson has been striving for his entire career. It's like he's got what he wanted, but it, you know, it tastes like ashes in his mouth. The sweetness has turned to bitterness because there's
once he's been achieved,
there's no need for him anymore. There's no, he doesn't have anyone's ear anymore. He's not being feted as sort of like a daring, cutting edge raconteur, and you know, sort of his poison pen dipping into his inkwell to, you know, churn out another vicious takedown. There's just no need for him anymore. So what he's retreating into is this kind of, this is his version of watching Entourage, is just sort of like musings on my suburban neighborhood. And, you know, and if Barack Obama's legacy is fulfilled and Joe Biden becomes president, you know, yeah, we can all sort of like the liberal and left wing side of it, like, you know, the we will have that opportunity as well to, you know, just sort of not care anymore about the things that, you know, we so loudly protested for the last 4 years.
Oh, man, it's going to be so good. New episodes of Entourage every night. Like they write them that day, and then like they make it like the Tonight Show. They write and produce a new Entourage every day.
I mean, it's so easy to write.
It should be like Big Brother. It should just be like the actors living in their Hollywood Hills mansion, having parties, hanging out, getting in hijinks. But it's just all filmed with sort of surveillance cameras in the house, so that they can wake up, you know, being in the role of Turtle, E, Vincent Chase, and Johnny Drama, get out of bed and just sort of go about their lives, and it's edited down every night, and then we watch it on TV.
I can't wait. It's going to be great. Everyone will be dead from Corona, but everyone else will be dead from laughter.
One more thing about Kevin D. Williamson. Wasn't the article that you reviewed on episode 2 basically about how if you're not getting what you need or want from your community, you should just pack up your shit and move?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
that was it.
Yes, it was.
Kevin, just take move. His own advice. Yeah, just move. If the lawnmower is too loud, just pack up your oaky wagon and move on to the next town.
Yeah, but the thing is with Kevin D. Williamson, though, like he makes clear that his neighborhood is quite a rich neighborhood. So like in his worldview, there's like, even if they do things to annoy him or that he finds vulgar or uncouth, rich people by virtue of their wealth can't really be morally wrong or subject to any kind of scolding or correction or discipline, because by virtue of their status that they've achieved in society, they're sort of above that, you know, whereas like his contempt and hatred for poor people of any kind gives him the right to administer sort of justice, discipline, and instruction for their benighted lives. So he can easily tell people in the hollers of Appalachia to just, you know, pick up and move to get out of their, you know, the fent holler that they're stuck in. But for him being mildly annoyed by his neighbors, he would never deign to move himself or correct any of his social betters.
Wait, so what's his point? He was
I'll finish reading the last two paragraphs, and you tell me what you think you can wring out of this. The smell of gasoline might be understood as the bouquet of our contempt for public places. Where do the homeless congregate? Under freeway overpasses, outside of gas stations, begging drivers waiting in lines at drive-through windows or jammed up at busy intersections. Tattered infantry to our high-riding armored cavalry. Half of the commercial and hospitality spaces in our country, from 7-Eleven to Starbucks, serve as part-time homeless shelters and mental wards for people blown out onto the street like, I won't belabor the metaphor. I'll let Dante do it for me. Standing outside the gates of hell, the great pilgrim sees the souls of the dead making their final procession. As the leaves fall away in autumn, one after another, till the bough sees all its spoils upon the ground, so there the evil seed of Adam, one by one, cast themselves from that shore at signals, like a bird at its call. So, yeah, he says, I won't belabor the metaphor. I'll just share a quote from Dante with you to stretch out this leaf thing I'm talking about just a little longer. And then he just says at the end, when life got back to normal for a little bit, I had accumulated things to do, some errands to run, and I started going back to the gym. I was so busy that I neglected my backyard for a few weeks. I was shocked by how quickly the weeds take over once again, if you let them. I think he's trying, like he's aiming at this to be some sort of, I don't know, bemused threnody for American culture or some element of our character, but it is just him just farting into his computer.
I'd love to see him like try out this his leaf blower bit and just bomb at a Trump rally.
Hey, y'all guys, hate leaf blowers? Fuck you, I love my fucking leaf blower! Mm-hmm. I'm proud of it all fucking day, fuck, I'll kill kill you.
It's just like he starts talking and he's like, you know, if I may belabor the metaphor a bit further, I believe William Wordsworth once said, and then just you're like just a fucking like a wall of leaf blow, just leaves just get blown straight at him as everyone in the front row just unholsters a fucking blower and blasts it right in his fucking dumb
face. Then Trump gets up there and he's like, fabric softener doesn't make things soft enough anymore. And everyone's just like, yeah, I fucking love you, sir.
I'm imagining modding my leaf blower to roll coal to take it to the Trump rally.
Yes, yes.
As Heinrich Heine wrote in 1821, where they burn leaves, they will in the end burn human beings too.
Chris brings up a good point because, like, those guys love being publicly annoying.
Yeah, that's the whole reason they're alive. That is all the conservatives is now. Is what, like, everybody who's freaking out about wearing a mask, everything, it's what are you going to do about it? That's the entire ethos. That's what they should put on the stupid snake flag instead of don't tread on me. It should just say, what are you going to do about it? That's the entire conservative ethos. Freedom and liberty in this country is the freedom to go in public and have no expectation or understanding that your desires have any boundary.
It's like a predecessor to what's happened to the Republican Party. It's kind of could be seen in John Leguizamo's The Pest, right? That's kind of like what they've all become.
Yeah, originally the RNC invited Trump to the into the fold because they wanted to hunt him for sport on one of their islands. But you know he got the better of them. He certainly did. That wily pest. No, but I mean, I guess like it's Kevin is he's not trying anymore. He's given up because you know we haven't talked about him enough on a lot on the show recently because it used to be when you know he would come out with some new fire, like there would definitely be something in there to, I don't know, feel angry about because of how it's just sort of inhumane and cruel he was in addition to being stupid. But this is just like there's nothing there. It's because it just like I said, like we finally achieved a society as cruel as the one that Kevin would like to live in, but he still doesn't like living in it. So,
oh, darn. There you
go. Nothing's ever enough. Shoot. No. Shucks. I mean, really what the national motto of America should be, it should reflect the idea of getting exactly what you want and hating it and crying about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what
Donald
we're really
Trump
about.
Is the avatar of that. Avatar is Trump has gotten only what he has wanted for the past 75 years of his life, and he is miserable. He has been more miserable every day that he's been alive, and he has never gotten anything other than exactly what he has wanted.
The only good day of his life was the hamburger party with the football game.
Hamburger, handsome quarterback hamburger party, and when he put the medal on the dog.
Yeah, those were the only two really good moments of his moments. Life. Like those eclipse, like the birth of his children, any of his marriages, absolutely. Anything like that.
Yeah.
I was like, someone was speculating on Twitter the other day about this, and it was like a very funny scenario to play out to imagine happening is if Don Jr. or Eric died before Donald did, like what his eulogy for them would be like. It would just be like, many people just said Don Jr. was a good son, but then again, many people said he wasn't. he sure liked the things that he liked, though.
He liked shooting the animals. He loved it with the animals. He had fun with that.
I thought his beard was very nasty towards the end, though. Well, there we go. I think that about does it for today's episode. I want to thank Adam Friedland for hanging out with us once again. Always a pleasure.
Thanks for having me on.
And you know, I would like this. I think your third or fourth appearance on the show now. I think I would like this episode to serve as a monument or a sort of a blueprint going forward for the newly formed Chapo and Cumtown joint subreddit. Only for good vibes and fans of both programs who have the correct mindset to imbibe the sort of mutually reinforcing truths that both of our shows are providing for you.
Only the ascendant can touch this realm.
Yes, it's the Chapo Cumtown fan. That synthesis, those are the ascended ones.
Yes.
They will enter the kingdom of God. All others will be cast into Gehenna.
Indeed.
So, till next time, guys.
Bye-bye.
Salutes.
Later.
Bye.